We haven't changed what we know to be the case, in that if we're going to make opportunities available to all Australians, then the fundamentals still exist. And education is absolutely essential. And we need to get kids into school. We need to ensure that their experience in school is a culturally competent one, so they can feel comfortable in school, they can learn. And then when they go into university, we know that, for example, we've got a 70% increase in people who are starting university, but we've only got just over 25% of people are completing their bachelor degree. And so that's why we've made significant investments around the stickiness. We have the Australian Indigenous Mentoring Experience, where ensure that they're with the students to ensure that they stay both at high school and in early university. That's why we provide Indigenous support centres at the university. We've made a huge investment in the Australian Indigenous scholarship programs to ensure that if people don't have a school where they are, a high school where they are, and particularly because of numbers, particularly in remote Australia, we've actually ensured that they can get to any school anywhere. We're making investments over a whole suite of issues around education and getting people into school. The remote school attendance strategy, we have awful. Frankly, we inherited an awful situation, significantly declining school attendance for very young kids. And that was going awfully. Now, we've had, since we've got into government, we've had 70% of the schools in the Northern Territory have recorded an increase, and they were all going down. 83% in Queensland schools recorded an increase. So what we're offering in this space is success. What we're offering in this space is acknowledging that community-driven programs work. RSAS is a community program. We sat down, we co-designed the program. That's why it works. We said we're going to get adults into work. So since I've come to office, over 39,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been engaged in work. And we're really focusing on ensuring that the employer subsidies aren't paid until after 6 months, which is why people are staying so long in jobs, because we know over 80% of people will stay in long-term, full-time work after 6 months. So that's 39,000. That's really successful. And again, it's really important. We know that an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander organisation or business is 100 times more likely to employ an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person. So where we've had our procurement policy, when I started off, it was $6.2 million that the government was buying off Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses. So we've introduced a pretty tough policy for government, and in 10 months, we've moved to $154 million over that. So when you say, what are we doing? Well, we're succeeding. How did we get to that point? Because we listened to Aboriginal communities, we talked to Supply Nation, we talked to the Indigenous Chambers of Commerce, and with them, we constructed something that would work. We've done a lot more in remote Australia with our CDP reforms. There's been a fivefold increase in the number of job seekers who are engaged in training and in purposeful activities that they have designed.
We're talking about what's working, what's not working, and changes which you've been talking about. Some of the welfare initiatives like the healthy welfare cards and some of those are work for the dole programs. So a lot of people have been complaining about those and that it's actually reducing rights of people. Now, recently there was a flare-up about one of the work for dole programs where people were having money deducted if they weren't showing up. Do you think we need to look more into working on and providing services for some of the causes around why people might have their issues and not showing up, and same with the healthy welfare cards?
So I don't think there's been complaints in that regard with the healthy welfare card. Again, the healthy welfare card was something that is voluntary. A community volunteered into those processes. It's very early days yet, and it seems very, very positive, I have to say. But in terms of some of those remarks were made about work for the dole. They were, Jobs Australia is an organisation that represents the providers. Now, I have to say, the providers have provided a lot of pushback. You know, they are actually going to have to provide activities for their funds. They can't just have people on the books and take money all the time. They actually have to provide assistance to people. They have to go to those people. They have to take them out of the misery of passive welfare, just the hiding in the dark often. And we need to provide them with purposeful activities that suit them. You know, whether it's Meals on Wheels and having younger people serving older people breakfast and lunch and dinner and talking to them, having a cup of tea, whether it's having accelerated language programs, because many people in the communities, particularly where we have high levels of disengagement, have language. And we need to ensure that that language is a fundamental part of school, as is culture. So these are the sort of initiatives that people need to get involved in. And yes, that's more difficult, but I am not interested in how difficult it is for the providers. Their task is to ensure that people are engaged and are taken away from the dreadful sickness that occurs around passive welfare, long-term passive welfare. That's the most important thing. Yes, we get complaints for them, but I am going to hold them to task. We pay them a great deal of money, and I will always ensure that money translates into ensuring that there are culturally competent opportunities for purposeful activities in community for Aboriginal and Islander people.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay. As part of our broadcast this week for the federal election 2016, this interview features the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion. Well, next question. The Prime Minister's Cabinet responded in the last fortnight to the federal opposition support for a treaty with Australia's First People, and the Prime Minister believes a treaty negotiation will interrupt the constitutional recognition process. So as the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, why is a treaty between our First Peoples and the Commonwealth of Australia put aside when Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people obviously were here first before British settlement, federation and the constitution was drawn up in the 1900s?
We're not saying at all that we shouldn't talk about treaty, but we shouldn't blur the issues, because if we blur the issues, as a matter of fact, if we blur the issues and say constitutional recognition is all about treaty, forget about it. Let's not have a constitutional recognition process because it will fail. So what we're asking is to separate the matters. I have discussions on treaty every day. You know, I have some particular protocols of a North Queensland nation about entry to country of another nation. I speak about them regularly. We discuss the growth of the protocols and about how we should handle these protocols. You know, do I text someone? All of these sort of processes of respect and how one nation treats another are being dealt with in my portfolio on a daily basis. And the conversation around constitutional recognition and blurring that with treaty at the same time, if you don't know exactly what treaty is and it's blurred with constitutional recognition, it will fail. It will fail.
But a lot of people
very,
know
very
that.
Hard to get one across. Well, because if you don't, every constitutional change, if people are unsure about what it means, they won't vote for it. That's just the way it is. Anybody who's been in this space understands that. So people have to understand exactly what they're voting for and exactly what it means. And it doesn't mean we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, I have treaty discussions every day in a post-constitutional recognition environment, and hopefully it's only a year away. Of course people can then continue to introduce another element like treaty. And many of the commentators, including many Indigenous people I talk to, are saying, well, you know, we can do both, but we shouldn't say, let's have one after rather than the other. And it is. If we are not careful, we'll lose the opportunity to get a positive outcome. Right at the moment, there's a very high degree of public support for constitutional recognition because they understand, in broad terms, what that is. We've had some broad discussions about changes to the constitution, the sort of changes to the constitution. We've got a referendum council that the Leader of the Opposition and Malcolm Turnbull have jointly appointed. Now, we've been working in a very consensual, a bipartisan way to achieve that. Now, that doesn't guarantee success, but if you're now throwing in, let's talk about treaty at the same time in the same conversation, in terms which we don't actually know about, the nature we're not really sure about, adds a level of uncertainty that actually puts at risk the constitutional recognition process. And all I'm saying is, of course, we talk about a treaty. I talk about a treaty all the day, but I just caution people, it doesn't have to be either or. Why does it have to be, oh, we've got to have one or the other? I just don't get it. If we all pull together, we can have a constitutional change to the founding document of this nation that recognises a very special place that our first Australians rightly play in this nation, both historically and now, and make some important changes to that. But my view is not that I don't want to have a treaty or I want to have a treaty or any of those sort of matters, and that isn't entirely a matter for me. But it's about if you blur these two issues together, then I think that is going to hurt the chances and public support for constitutional recognition.
But that's the government ownership around the constitutional recognition. I mean, I understand with the recommendations that there will be two amendments regarding race power that can make decisions based on race, which is using an example of the Northern Territory intervention. So obviously we need to get rid of those, and we can't do it unless there is a referendum to do so.
That's exactly right.
It's about having those race powers taken out of the equation.
Talk about constitutional recognition in the context of changes to the constitution. There are going to be, and they have been suggested, and they have been accepted that there is a number of changes to the constitution in that regard. And they are all very important things, as you indicate. And all I'm saying is that you know, surely we can have a conversation about treaty and we can actually say, look, constitutional recognition's here. This is the process for constitutional recognition. In a post-constitutional recognition environment, we can start talking about other matters.
Yeah, I think the seriousness of the treaty is that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Say, using like the Kenby land claim as an example, the amount of years and work that was done to make that happen. The treaty process is, you know, within between all nations, all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations in Australia coming together and having a treaty with themselves first and then with the federal government, well, with the Commonwealth. So it's a big process and something
that's
that obviously
right.
can't
well,
be rushed. But,
well, that's right.
You know,
that's right. So that's why it's so important to allow, I think, the debate around constitutional recognition to happen first. And I think there'll be some lessons from that. In terms of what we're doing post-constitutional recognition, I've actually had conversations with the representatives of nations often, and I think certainly shows me the complexity of the matter. There is no one nation at all, and it's disrespectful to see it that way. There are hundreds of nations across Australia, Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander nations, and each one of those nations, to be respected, needs to have their own say and respect for their own autonomy in these matters. And as I would hope that any discussions around this or other matters doesn't take 40 years. We have learned a lot from the past, and we do need to respect that independent and individual nations, some of whom I've been discussing this matter with, need to have their voices heard.